Hello, watch lovers, and welcome to the podcast. I am Suhail Bhatia, and welcome you on this fascinating journey through the world of Rolex. This podcast comes to you from TURF, the Ultimate Rolex Forum, and you can find us at www.newturfers.com. During the course of these podcasts, I will be sharing the history of the Rolex brand, its founder, Hans Wilsdorf, as well as the history and significance of a lot of Rolex's popular models like the Submariner, GMT Master, Explorer, President, and many others. I would also be happy to receive inputs from listeners about what they would like to hear in these podcasts, so please email me at theultimaterolexforum@gmail.com. This podcast is in two parts. Part 1 is the history of Rolex from the perspective of Hans Wilsdorf, its founder, and Part 2 is a guide on how to identify a fake Rolex. But before we start on the first part of the podcast, I'd like to point out that I'm not a native French speaker, nor do I speak German very well, so please excuse me if I butcher some of the names. Hans Wilhelm Wilsdorf was born on the 22nd of March 1881 in Kulmbach, Bavaria, to a family of ironmongers. This business had been established by his grandfather, Karl Wilsdorf, in 1842, and passed down to his father after that. Tragedy struck the Wilsdorf family in 1893 when first his mother Anna died, and his father Ferdinand followed later in the same year. Hans Wilsdorf was an orphan at the young age of 13. In later years, Hans Wilsdorf would attribute the passing of his parents being the cause of his dogged self-reliance and ultimately his success later in life. Hans was sent to boarding school in Coburg by his uncle and aunt, who now were caring for Hans and his family. In boarding school, he excelled in mathematics and English. These were to play a very important role in his life in later years. At the age of 19, he took up a job at a company called Kuno Korten, who were watch exporters. He handled their English correspondence with their American and British buyers, and this helped him to build a contact bank that would prove to be invaluable later in his career. It was at this time that he realized the potential that the watch industry had and decided to make his career in it. In 1903, at the age of 24, Hans moved to London, determined to start his own business. In London, he partnered with an Englishman called Alfred Davis, and they started a company called Wilsdorf and Davis. Hans Wilsdorf was finally in business. The company imported watches for the British market at a time when wristwatches were worn only by women, and men primarily relied on their pocket watches for timekeeping purposes. But all that was about to change. In the year 1908, on the 2nd of July, Hans registered the name Rolex in Switzerland and in London in 1912. The origin of the word is yet unknown. Some say that it was derived from the term horologie exquisite, or the sound that a watch makes when it is being wound. Whatever the source might have been, Rolex was a name that was easy to pronounce, and Hans realized that ease of pronunciation and recall were vital in the building of a brand. On July 14, 1914, Rolex was awarded the Class A Certificate of Precision from the Kew Observatory in England. After receiving the award, Wilsdorf decided that all Rolex watches would undergo similar testing and would only be sold with their timing certificate. This tradition continues to this day, with all new Rolexes being COSC certified and being sold along with their certificates. During the First World War, three major changes took place in the watch industry. The first being that there was an anti-German sentiment in Britain and America. Even though Hans Wilsdorf was married to an English woman and had taken up British citizenship, he was concerned that a German name like Wilsdorf might make buyers wary of his watches. He officially renamed Wilsdorf and Davis to the Rolex Watch Company on November 15, 1915. The second was that wristwatches became more masculine than pocket watches. The trenches wanted to be able to tell the time, but also wanted to have both hands free. and would tie their pocket watches with a piece of leather onto their wrist. This evolved into the wristwatch that we know today. Wristwatches became the new sign of machismo as soldiers were the ones that were wearing watches on their wrist. The third change was that during the war, the British government imposed a heavy duty of 33.33% on watches and watch parts. This made it difficult for the factory to remain in Britain, and therefore in 1919, Rolex relocated to Geneva, Switzerland, which is the traditional home of watchmaking. In the year 1925, Paul Perregaux and Georges Perret filed a patent for a moisture-proof winding system and button. When Wilsdorf heard about the patent, he immediately bought the invention. Implementing the new system on his wristwatches, Rolex launched their newest creation in July 1926 and called it the Oyster, which symbolized its waterproof nature. Crystal was also added during that time, thereby making the watch watertight on three sides: the case back, the crown, and the crystal. At the start of the Second World War, Swiss watch sales were badly hit, especially after Germany invaded unoccupied Vichy France in November 1942, and neutral Switzerland found itself completely encircled by Axis powers. Watch companies were cut off from their best customers, which were the British and the Americans. Rolex, however, discovered that there were plenty of British and American people right on Switzerland's doorstep, literally a captive market in German prisoner of war camps. Stalag Luft III, for example, housed up to 10,000 Allied airmen shot down in operations over occupied Europe. Thousands more Allied officers were interned in various officer POW camps scattered throughout the German Reich. Following is the letter sent to Corporal Clive Nutting of the Royal Corps of Signals from Rolex. Date, 30th March 1943. Dear Sir, we beg to acknowledge receipt of your order dated 10th March 1943, and in accordance with your instructions, we will supply you with one chronograph Oyster number 122. The watch costs today Swiss francs 250, but you must not even think of settlement during the war. As we have a large number of orders in hand for officers, there will be some unavoidable delay in the execution of your order, but we will do the best we can for you. Meanwhile, believe us to believe, yours truly, Hans Wilsdorf. This watch was eventually delivered to Corporal Nutting on 10th of July 1943, and it might be added was very helpful in aiding the prisoners of war to escape Stalag Luft III, as immortalized in the movie The Great Escape. The watch that Wilsdorf sent was used to time the frequency of the guards to help the prisoners escape using the tunnel Harry. In the year 1954, Hans Wilsdorf's wife passed away, and in the same year, Hermann Eichler, his longtime friend and business partner, died as well. Since he did not have any heirs, he created the Hans Wilsdorf Foundation in the year 1945. The foundation was to own the company after his death, and he gave very explicit instructions on how the company was to be run. The company was never to be sold or publicly traded, and part of the profits were to be donated to several charities and watch schools. In May 1953, a Rolex watch was involved in one of the major feats of humanity at that time, the conquest of Mount Everest. Sherpa Tenzing Norgay wore a prototype of what was to become the Rolex Explorer on his wrist, while Edmund Hillary wore a watch made by the English company Smith's. Neither Hillary nor Norgay have ever revealed who first set foot on the summit. We will never know if it was a Smith's or a Rolex that was the first watch on Mount Everest. Also in 1953, Rolex launched two new models to their range, the Milgauss and the Turnograph. We will be discussing both these models in future podcasts in more detail. And in 1954, Rolex launched a new model called the Submariner. This watch was to become the iconic tool watch and would be worn by one of the best-known spies in the world, James Bond. Again, in 1954, Rolex launched the GMT Master for Pan Am. This watch featured a 24-hour hand that allowed the wearer to know the time in two different time zones. Again, we will be studying these individual models in more detail in future podcasts. Hans Wilsdorf, the poor orphan boy from Bavaria, had now created one of the best-known brands in the world. Unfortunately, he didn't live long enough to see what his company would ultimately achieve, and he died on the 6th of July, 1960. Difference number one, the seconds hand movement. The seconds hand on a genuine Rolex will tick between 5 to 8 times per second, giving the illusion that the hand is sweeping across the dial. The Oyster Quartz and the True Beat models are the exceptions to this, and their hands beat once per second. Fakes with automatic movements also have sweep second hands, but the sweep is more interrupted and choppy, and the hands beat perhaps 3 to 4 times per second. The difference number two is the Cyclops and its magnification. The Cyclops are one of the iconic features of Rolex watches, and they really set them apart from the rest. For authentic Rolexes, the Cyclops, or the bubble as it is also sometimes known, will magnify the date aperture 2.5 times. The date window is actually quite small if you look at it from the sides, and the Cyclops magnifies it to fill up the entire Cyclops. On fake Rolexes, the magnification will be significantly low. Fake watches may also have crooked or badly positioned Cyclops. Though some of the high-end fakes may have the right magnification, almost all of the low and mid-level fakes will have low magnification Cyclopses. Difference number three, Luminova and Superluminova. For Rolexes that have either Luminova or Superluminova, when the dial has been exposed to strong light, the hands and indices should glow for several hours, while the glow on fake watches will fade out within a few minutes. This is not true for watches that have tritium because over the years, tritium would have lost most of its luminous capabilities. Difference number four, extra functions and complications. A lot of cheaper fakes have extra functions, especially in the Daytona models. Instead of having a chronograph function, they will often have the day, date, and month. In some watches, the dial might say Submariner, but there might be a fourth GMT hand. One must also look at the dial and the markings very closely. The writing on authentic Rolex watches will be clean and crisp, while in the fakes, it would be hazy and poor. Difference five, micro etched crystals. Starting from the K series in 2001 2002, Rolex started engraving a tiny coronet onto their crystals. This has eventually found its way across the Rolex line, the exception being the new Milgauss. To see the crystal, one needs to have a 10 magnification loop and just the right angle to view it. Most fake Rolex manufacturers have indeed started adopting the laser crystals, but in the fake watches, the coronet is easily visible with the naked eye. So that's one of the major differences that you would see. Difference number six, model number and serial numbers. Genuine Rolex watches have the serial number engraved between the lugs at the 6 o'clock position and the model number on the 12 o'clock position. You would have to remove the bracelet to view these engravings. If the watch that you are buying has papers, then be sure to countercheck the numbers on the watch with that on the engraving. In fake watches, what they have done is they generally take a random serial number and continue it throughout the line. Difference number seven, the Rolex rehaul and serial numbers. Since about 2008-2009, Rolex have been engraving the word Rolex on the rehaul. That's the ring between the dial and the crystal. Some people may even call that the chapter ring. And on the 6 o'clock position, the serial number of the watch is mentioned. As always, the counterfeiters have managed to replicate this as well, but the quality of the engraving is a dead giveaway. These are some of the more common things to look out for when buying a watch, but as we always say on the forum, buy the seller, not the watch. This brings us to the end of the podcast, and I look forward to hearing from you soon. Please email me at theultimaterolexforum@gmail.com. Please also send your donations to us via PayPal at theultimaterolexforum@gmail.com. Do remember that your donations are what keep us going, so please send what you can. Over the next few episodes, we're going to be doing something very exciting. We're going to be exploring the history of some of Rolex's most iconic models, the Submariners, Explorers, GMTs, and others. So I look forward to seeing you then. Goodbye. Neither Hillary nor Norgay have ever revealed who first set foot on the summit. We will never know if it was a Smith's or a Rolex that was the first watch on Mount Everest. Also in 1953, Rolex launched two new models to their range, the Milgauss and the Turnograph. We will be discussing both these models in future podcasts in more detail. And in 1954, Rolex launched a new model called the Submariner. This watch was to become the iconic tool watch and would be worn by one of the best-known spies in the world, James Bond. Again, in 1954, Rolex launched the GMT Master for Pan Am. This watch featured a 24-hour hand that allowed the wearer to know the time in two different time zones. Again, we will be studying these individual models in more detail in future podcasts. Hans Wilsdorf, the poor orphan boy from Bavaria, had now created one of the best-known brands in the world. Unfortunately, he didn't live long enough to see what his company would ultimately achieve, and he died on the 6th of July, 1960. That brings us to the end of this section, a truly remarkable life and an inspiration to us all. Part two of the podcast is how to spot a fake Rolex. There are several grades of fake Rolexes out there, from cheap $50 fakes with quartz movements to high-quality fakes with real automatic movements that may look almost as perfect on the outside. The objective of this section is to update you on the common mistakes that counterfeiters make and can help you make your watch buying experience a lot safer. Of course, the most sure way of weeding out counterfeits is to take the watch to an authorized dealer or to Rolex themselves. But this section will help you write off the most obvious fakes.